Welcome to the Intersectionality Lab, a fair space to explore intersections.
Hi, and welcome to the Intersectionality Lab podcast, a space where we discuss all things intersectional. I'm Hilal, and hosting with me today we have Katarina. Today's episode is about Turkey's withdrawal decision from the Istanbul Convention, but now it's time to welcome Ezel Bursasoy-Mesocek to the Intersectionality Lab podcast. She is a feminist, lawyer, and the advocacy coordinator of the organization Women for Women's Human Rights. She has been working professionally and voluntarily in the field of women's and LGBTQ plus rights. And today she is here to answer our questions about the convention and the current situation in Turkey. Hi Ezel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you guys. Thank you Hilal. Thank you for inviting me and having me. It's a big pleasure for me.
Thanks. So I just want to briefly mention what this convention is. The Istanbul Convention, also known as the Council of Europe Convention on Preventing and Combating Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence, aims to prevent any kind of violence toward women and advocates for a zero tolerance policy against family violence. Turkey was the first country to ratify this convention. However, in 2021, the Office of the President announced that Turkey had withdrawn from this convention. What were the main reasons behind this decision?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is just before getting started, I must say that it's a big shame. It's a big shame to, to say that we are still making debates and we are still continue to discuss about the Istanbul Convention and the withdrawal decision. It is a big shame that we have to fight for going back to the Istanbul Convention. It's a big shame to say that we are still lack of the Istanbul Convention's guarantees and protection. It's a big shame. Unfortunately, Turkey in March 2021, with a very arbitrary presidential decree, Turkey withdrawn from the convention. They announced it in the middle of the night without consulting, any NGOs, any women organizations or making any public debate. So the official reason for this, as we know, they said that the official explanation for the withdrawal is the government was saying that the convention is used by LGBTIs, is used by homosexuals to promote homosexuality and LGBTIs, and it was also against the traditional Turkish family values, allegedly.
Okay, and so what were the additional steps that they took after the withdrawal?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, after the withdrawal, after such a hate speech, such a hatred against LGBTIs, of course, the first steps was normalizing this hatred and hate speech against LGBTIs among the public. More specifically, for instance, they made various public opinion, direct statements before the public were indicating that LGBTIs are damaging the Turkish family values, and especially LGBTI organizations and CSOs, LGBTI associations should be closed, and LGBTIs are demons and, the marginalized groups, and they have to be, the organizations have to be closed. These kind of statements were publicly made by very high-level officials. And then very recently, for instance, they made a proposal to amend the Turkish constitution's a very specific article on protection of family. And they did that claiming the proposed amendments on Turkish constitution was targeting to Turkish family values and Turkish family, and they are trying to stop allegedly LGBTI or same-sex marriages. But it was super interesting because according to the Turkish law, it is impossible to impossible to make same-sex marriages between LGBTI couples. So it was another political tool to spread hatred towards LGBTIs among public. And very recently, the government announced a policy paper called Protection of Family, and and it's not a binding legal document, but it's just a policy paper. And there are multiple indicators in this policy paper, and they are mostly offering some, for instance, some education, some media coverage, and some family mediation, all about against LGBTIs and against against homosexuality, allegedly, and just because in order to protect Turkish family values. And they also announced this year, 2025, as the family year, protection of family year. So all these discourses revolving around LGBTI hate and hatred is actually coming from all or reached the top level just after the withdrawal from Istanbul Convention.
And in the Turkish context, what do you think are the main misconceptions or misunderstandings regarding the Istanbul Convention?
Mm-hmm. As I just said, actually the government and unfortunately GONGOs that we called government-oriented NGOs, I think they started in 2018. They started to spread misinformation about the Istanbul Convention by saying that Istanbul Convention is, you know, imposing some some sort of specific gender ideology. You know, it is used by LGBTIs, and it's just a tool of propaganda to normalize LGBTIs, and it's therefore it damages the Turkish family values because it, you know, imposes homosexuality, especially to children. What they were saying this, but the problem is here. The government used these discourses very well, very smartly. But this kind of discourses comes from GONGOs or government-oriented NGOs, as I said. It was not not a true debate, a true public debate, or a true public demand. There was no such civil society. Like first, Turkey. In Turkey, we experienced, especially in after 2016, we experienced some groups like divorced fathers or family councils, or you know, some men's rights groups. And these groups were like pop up, and they were directly attacking to women's rights and gender equality systematically. So especially after 2018, they were attacking the Turkish, for instance, Turkish civil codes and Turkish, you know, egalitarian provisions in the Turkish constitution on gender equality, and they were also attacking the Istanbul Convention. And what was important one, the point here, the government used these groups very well, and they were, you know, they were always together, and they were always emerged with each other. So the government used these discourses like, look, the public demands it. The public ask us for withdrawal, but it was not a public debate. It was not just a true NGOs or civil society, but it was all fake. Well, all politically, you know, coordinated some sort of groups, and they were allegedly they were politically organized under the AKP's, under the government's anti-gender ideology.
Yep. And so in these like setting, how is Turkey now handling gender-based violence issues in the absence of the Istanbul Convention monitoring mechanisms?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good question, because it is not an easy question. First of all, we lost Grevio Committee. We lost the Istanbul Convention's mechanism, monitoring mechanism called Grevio Committee, to monitor the implementation of Istanbul Convention and what government is doing on preventing violence against women. So we lost the most comprehensive monitoring mechanism on violence against women. In the absence of Istanbul Convention, we have a domestic law on preventing violence against women. It's called Law Number 6284. It is the only domestic law on preventing violence against women, and it was actually codified just after the Istanbul Convention ratification. And they, these domestic law and Istanbul Convention, they were all almost the same in the way of conceptualizing the violence against women. But there are some important missing points in this domestic law. First, in the domestic law on preventing violence against women, there is no effective protection against, first, lesbians, bisexuals, and trans women. And second, there is no effective protection for asylum seekers, refugees, and migrant women. So these two points is very important, especially for migrant and refugee women as well, because as you may know, there are more than, you know, Turkey is the second host country in the world. The biggest Syrian population, Syrian refugee population is living in. So it is important. It is also important for LGBT, for lesbian, bisexual and trans women as well, because in such a country, you know, withdrawal from Istanbul Convention with a hate, directly hate speech towards LGBTIs, violence against LGBTI people is, I mean, alarmingly increasing, and there is no legal protection, you know. So these two big point is missing in the domestic law. Also, in the domestic law, there is some political perspective, I mean, in context of political perception, there are some missing points as well. For instance, in the domestic law, the law does not include the term of gender and gender equality. And as you know, gender equality and gender is the one of the main conceptions in Istanbul Convention, right? Because the Istanbul Convention defines the violence against women as a form of gender discrimination, right? As a very concrete form of discrimination based on gender. So this kind of political differences actually stands in the very center of the domestic law in Turkey. So yes, we have such a law and it's very important, but in the absence of Istanbul Convention, it actually, you know, it has some deficiencies in practice, especially for some minorities, I can say. Yes.
Given the current situation, what guidance would you offer Turkish authorities to successfully combat violence against women and defend women's rights?
Well, actually, after withdrawal, they conducted a parliamentary research group under the Turkish parliament to, you know, to make a research on what are the reasons and what are the possible solutions for violence against women. But as feminists, we always say that, well, there is no need to such a, you know, huge efforts, because the solution is super clear. The solution is going back to the Istanbul Convention and again ratify the Istanbul Convention and implement the Istanbul Convention. So the only solution is implementing the Istanbul Convention.
Yeah, we were wondering if you could talk a little bit about the work that Women for Women's Rights does.
Sure. WWHR, or Women for Women's Human Rights, is an independent feminist organization based in Istanbul, and we founded in 1993. Almost we are almost 31 years right now, years old right now. So it's WWHR is dedicated to promote the gender equality and women's basic human rights in Turkey and also in globally. We have three main program in the association. First one is a human rights education program for women, and it was implemented by WWHR, by our organizations, and it's so far reached more than thousands of women across Turkey. We also conduct advocacy work at local, national, and international level to influence legal and policy reforms in Turkey. And indeed, WWHR played a very critical, very central role in reforming Turkish penal code and Turkish civil code. So also, we have a feminist knowledge production team, our communication team, and we are it's very important for us to, you know, to contribute to feminist knowledge production and you know publishing research, publishing resources and tools to advocate for gender equality.
What methods do you use to raise public awareness about preventing violence against women?
Well, as I said, actually, just 10 years ago or 15 years ago, WWHR was doing the secretariat of these huge campaigns on Turkish legal codes reforming or Turkish civil code reform campaigns. Because in that time period, it was possible to make a dialogue, a civic dialogue with governments, with law makers. And it was possible to raise our demands, raise women's demands with the government and negotiate it on them. And indeed, it worked. We made it. Turkish feminist movement and Turkish women's movement, LGBTI women's, made huge success on those, for instance, legal campaigns. But today, unfortunately, we had no such advocacy tool like dialogue with government or like dialogue with public. So that's why, unfortunately, in the legal campaign, legal reforming campaigns, we have only the digital tools or raising awareness tools or, you know, international level advocacy tools we have. But it is, of course, it is not that much sufficient, you know. But digital tools, especially social media or the other tools like YouTube or alternative media, I can say, is very important for us to reach, especially to reach young women. And we are, you know, strategically trying to use these alternative media channels more effectively to reach and influence young people. And kinda it works in Turkey because, again, because especially 2016, it's another story, but we have no right to protest on public spheres. So if you have, you know, if you cannot gather together and, you know, to make protest to raise your demands, what do you have? What's the alternative for this? The only thing is digital tools and digital or alternative methods to come together and, you know, to organize against patriarchy. And that's why we are using strategically, have to use more effectively the social media and the other digital tools. So this is one thing. And the second thing, in order to fight against disinformation and populist discourses of governments on gender equality, we focus to make data-based research to, you know, to fight against these misinformation campaigns. So that's why, for instance, right now we are conducting, still it's continuing, we are conducting a research on women's poverty, for instance, and what is the dimension or what is the relation with women's poverty and violence against women, for instance, especially violence in marriages, and what are the relationship between poverty and economic violence towards women. So database research, database advocacy, and more effective usage of digital tools are the examples or answer that I can give you.
What about the collaborations? Do you collaborate with local governments or other NGOs in Turkey?
Yeah, it's another, yeah, it's a good question. Collaboration, yes, seems very important, especially with local governments, because in the last, election. Yes, in the last election, CHP, the major opposition party, became the first party in the elections, and they won very important cities in Turkey. So after the last election, we have to look the more strategic ways to collaborate with local governments, especially in these big cities. But right now, the government is also attacking the, unfortunately, because of the erosion in rule of law and because of the erosion in, you know, the judicial powers and free judiciary, they are now attacking the local governments, and they cancel the elections in some cities, and they appoint trustees to the local governments instead of elected presidents in these cities. So all the protocols, all the collaborations, all the, you know, work we are doing with these local governments now are, you know, shrinking because the government is appointing trustees, especially to the Kurdish cities where the Kurdish Kurdish people, Kurdish minorities heavily living in. So it's another problematic area. But of course, collaboration with local NGOs and making alliances with more broad alliances with international and feminist movements and international LGBTI movement is super important for us, especially on violence against women and Istanbul Convention, because we know that anti-gender discourses and policies, and especially the attacks revolving around the Istanbul Convention, is very similar in very different parts of Europe and globally. So that's why international collaborations and broader alliances is seeming very important to us.
And so, like, your organization has this huge history. What has been one of the most effective campaigns in raising awareness about femicides in Turkey in this, like, whole history of your organization?
There was a huge legal reform on Turkish penal code in 2004, and the WWHR was making the secretary role of this campaign. And the one of the important demands in this legal reform for women, for feminists, is in the older form of the code, there was some provisions like if you rape, for instance, a sex worker, or if you rape a single woman, then the sentence you will charge is going to be, you know, decreased or, you know, mitigated. So these sort of patriarchal provisions were eliminated thanks to the feminist campaigns that the WWHR is just one part of it. But I can say that this Turkish penal code reform was very important also for honor crimes. It is still a cultural thing in Turkey, but at least we have now legal protection in the Turkish penal code that prohibits crimes or femicides under the name of so-called honor.
In light of the information you provided and continuing discussions in Turkey, how do you see the Istanbul Convention's future?
I'm kind of 100% I'm sure that we will get back the Istanbul Convention one day. Maybe not with this government, maybe not with a, you know, free political choice, but I trust the European Court of Human Rights, because some cases now are before the Strasbourg Court, the Court of Human Rights. As I said, I'm kind of sure that we will go back to the Istanbul Convention.
Before we wrap up, Ezel, do you want to say something that we forgot to ask you, and do you think that you think it's super important for us to know?
No, but maybe what is the reason for attacking the Istanbul Convention? And it is not only for Turkey, and globally the Istanbul Convention is under attack. Maybe it is important to say some small things about it, because Istanbul Convention is super unique convention, and it was why it is super unique, because it was not just, you know, setting some standards for government, but also it was saying, it was openly targeting, referring to the patriarchy as the source of violence against women. And it was openly say that, directly saying that the violence against women was a concrete form of patriarchal power relationships, and it was a concrete form of gender discrimination. So I think this perspective is not, you know, not a perspective we are familiar with, especially in international human rights law, right? So it's important. It is also important to say that, especially feminists from the field, from the streets. Women, LGBTI from the streets, made huge efforts to codify, to write and formalization in the convention, right? So this is why the Istanbul Convention is super unique, because it comes from the experiences, it comes from the real violations, real experience from streets, from the field. So that's why I think the governments is there now, they sort of, you know, realize what is it and what is the, you know, meaning of it, what is the power of the Istanbul Convention, and they now started to attack the convention because they are super afraid of feminists and LGBTIs, I guess.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks to Ezar Gusasun-Mesojak for joining us during that critical discussion of Turkey's withdrawal from the Istanbul Convention. We hope that today's episode was interesting, and we would love to get our comments on today's episode. As always, thanks for listening to the Intersectionality Lab podcast.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab. If some terms or topics made you curious, check out our website. Maybe some of the resources will keep your thoughts rolling. Meet us where the lines cross. We are a non-profit research center working on human rights, gender equality, and active citizenship. And this podcast was created with the support of our team.